Hello and welcome to the September 12th, 2013 regular meeting of the Civil Service Commission. In attendance today are myself, Robert Killian, Bruce Weiland, William Foster, and Ed Alex. Linda McMacken has resigned from the commission due to time constraints. We do have a current vacancy, but we still have a working quorum. Call this meeting to order, and our first item of business is disclosure of any conflicts of interest or important in-between meeting communication. Anything, Bruce?
Nope, nothing to report, thanks.
I have nothing to report. My mouth is full, but I have nothing to report.
No conflicts of interest, only in-between meeting communications were with Linda to wish her well. Conversations with Kate on agenda setting items. I did have one topic kind of corollary to the conflicts of interest. There was a letter to the editor of the Inside Bainbridge article, and there was mention of the Civil Service Commission, and I think this is the best place to approach it. There was a statement in that regarding the pressure that Civil Service Commission members may feel from city government, and that whether or not there were actions taken by prior city officials or police chiefs that may affect the Civil Service Commission. And I just want to again go around to make sure that no one feels any pressure to do anything that they don't fully support of their own volition.
I missed this article. What pressure were they alluding to?
There was a letter written by a concerned citizen in discussion of the Pendleton report, and in that letter that was mentioned the Civil Service Commission, and it was a discussion of the importance of amateurs or people from all walks of life being part of the Civil Service Commission, but individuals that may not be as familiar with police investigations or have a background in that may not feel that they have all the information and feel some pressure from city officials or a police chief to do things that they otherwise would not. I can read it verbatim if you so desire. I just want to ensure that we're all above the board here and that no one is feeling any such pressure to do anything that they wouldn't otherwise would.
I have felt no such pressure.
I register zero pressure.
Okay.
Ed, anything? I feel great pressure. The big money we're getting. Try to be resourceful.
All right. Nor do I. So I just wanted to put that out there. And also for future reference, we are doing our annual ethics board briefing from Susan Buckles, or a representative of the ethics board, probably later in the fall, probably October or November. Now that we have a new member of the board, we'll do that annual refresher with the ethics board and open public meetings act. All right. The approval of the July 11th minutes. I reviewed them. I didn't have any issues or discussion points on them.
Did you pass them on?
I emailed them.
All right. I must have read them. So I have no comments.
You're fine to me.
Yeah. Any comments on the meeting?
No.
Okay. Do I have a motion for approval of those minutes?
I'll move to approve.
Seconded?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Meeting minutes for July 11th are approved. Item number 4, public comment.
You know, I wasn't going to make one, but I think I would just like to thank you publicly for bringing my letter to the commissioner's attention. For those of you who haven't read it, it's more interesting.
Yeah.
Than just that.
We'll make sure. I will make sure.
Thank you. And I think I'll use my brief public comment to just flag something for you that is a related issue, which is that I'm hoping within the next few months, one of Mike Pendleton's recommendations that a civilian review board or a police commission be established on Bainbridge Island actually comes to fruition. And if that's the case, the issue of who serves on that commission is going to be awfully important. And one of the things I was trying to get at with that letter, which might be of interest, is this struggle that whoever is appointing these officials is going to have. The more in touch those representatives are with community interests, the more amateurish they are, the more easily swayed they're going to be by a chief, a city manager, when it comes to doing difficult things like considering complaints. And the more professional the people are that sit on that commission, the more expertise they'll have, and the more capacity they'll have to have independent judgment, but the less they'll reflect community opinion. It's an interesting dichotomy, and it's just something that I wanted to flag in that letter for people that are following police issues to be aware of. And again, Rob, I'm grateful that you brought it to the commission's attention. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Robert, did you have anything to add?
No, I think, well, yes, I'll say it's sure. One of the longest periods I've been to a child in history. I think
before we get too much further down, we did have an agenda adjustment. Item number 11, an executive session, is struck from the agenda. We no longer need that. So that's just an agenda adjustment. Report from the police chief, number 5.
Yes. Currently, we are working on several things, putting together a strategic plan, working on putting Lexapol in. I think you're aware of that. Following up on LEMAP's recommendations, working on that, and accomplishing some of those. We've accomplished several of the tasks and have approximately 26 more, 10 of which are mine and 16 which are department-wide, and some of those have already been done. So we're very close to getting Lexapol, pulling the trigger on it and having it implemented, which I think is a big jump. Talked about this. It's 3 years and 3 months that we've waited for this, and I think we're going to be able to get that done here very soon. So we're excited about that. That's my first public comment about, I'm sorry, my first part of my report about those items, because I think that's important. Part of the validation or the reputation of the department hinges on some of those things. I think we need to get those done and progress and move forward. Having said that, I have a town hall meeting next Thursday. I think we've all seen that and announced that. And that's an opportunity for the community to come and express, you know, whatever opinions or concerns or compliments or complaints, whatever they bring to the forefront. But that's an open town hall meeting. I'm going to have several of my staff there to answer questions. And of course, obviously, I will be there. And I want Bainbridge Island to know, and I've said this from the beginning, I think they've taken me up on it, because my days have been extremely long with meeting with people. I think Kim will admit, I think we've probably had, 10 meetings in the last 3 months or more. Huh? Right?
Only 8, Chief. Only 8.
Okay, hey, I don't know, I think it's more than that. It's been a few informals. So my point is, I am meeting and talking to people, and I've kind of got to the point where, and this is my report to the Civil Service Commission, I think it's important to know that this first 90 days has been spent understanding where we stand as a department, where we need to go. You know, you get this information on paper from some individuals, but you want to hear from the community. And I think I've heard from a lot of people, and I will continue to hear from people in Bainbridge Island. You know, there's 23,000. Maybe one day I'll have met every single one. But at this point, I think this is the time to get this plan, and we've put some things together to start creating the best department that we can, and one who meets the highest standards of professional law enforcement for the state of Washington. That's our goal, and I'm sure that's the commission's goal too, is to get us there. So, or to be a part of that. So that's my report, and like I say, I appreciate and look forward, and I hope that you, as a group, will maybe, if they can, as a group, attend the town hall meeting. I think it would be good for you to hear what people are saying and what they want to ask of me. So I think that would be very informative for you as a commission.
Remind me when and where it is.
It is September 19th, 6 to 8 p.m. It's been, we've put an ad in the paper, and we put it online, and I'm just going to confirm those dates and times. So
you're right.
It, right? I am right.
And it's here in the chamber.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Terry, are you in your engagement with the community of Bainbridge Island, are you getting a wide range of input? Does it feel that way, or is everyone
yes.
singing the same tune?
Oh, no,
or?
No, I get, there's you know, critics, and,
yeah.
and ones that, you know, support the welcome 100% and welcoming, but all in all, the community at large has been extremely welcoming to me as an individual, as chief,
yeah.
For the ones that are critics, they want want to see some change. And for those who support, are just glad that we have a chief on board. We've been without a chief for over a year. So I think on both sets, both opposite sides of that spectrum, I have seen a great amount of enthusiasm for me being here. Does that make sense? So regardless of where you sit on the fence, you know, on either side, they're excited that there's someone here to take the reins of that and move forward. And so, and that's kind of how I look at it. I really want to get us to get us at that point where we have that trust and that relationship among the community. And I think that's what we're building on. For example, I was walking Winslow Way down here among the businesses, and a gentleman stopped me. Ended up being 6 or 8 people standing in a circle around me. And the guy says, I've lived on the island 38 years, and I have never seen the chief walk down Winslow Way and shake his hand. And he says, I just want to show how grateful I am for that opportunity. So I think those types of trust-building activities by me getting out of that office and making sure that he knows I'm open to meeting and seeing people and listening to them, I think is important. And so when you say, you know, and I get both, you know, people don't like certain things that happened in the past or whatever else, but hearing it all helps us shape a plan to go to move forward. We have to progress. And the only way to progress is, you know, learn from the past and move on and correct or put things in place that help prevent and correct any past problems.
Would it be out of line if I made a little compliment?
No, not at all.
You don't probably hear many compliments. I went to the swearing in of your officer after from the last meeting, and it was impressive. I think it's neat to work in a small town. I think it would be neat to work in a small town as chief, where you know, people get they introduced this guy. You told about his background. He was a person by the time you left there. It was they don't have time to do that in the big departments. And I think you're lucky in that respect. You did a nice job.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, and I will piggyback on that comment to say that every indication we have that even the wonderful hire. Eric Pepper is a great addition to this department with his past and his education, his family, and the incident that I spoke of, which I won't belabor this time, but it's seldom what he did to help out an islander, a resident that he served. I just think speaks volumes about his character. I think that's what this commission and everyone on the island hopes to see as far as the kind of officers that we have are those that with difficult type of qualities. Talk too highly of it, but it's a great asset to the community. I think it'll be a great service for the people.
Appreciate coming.
Yeah, one question, not the commission business, obviously, but I know you've got a ton of things on your plate. Have you thought about or formulated a policy towards a school resource officer and that whole relationship, or is that not yet up at the top of the pile?
That's in the mix. If the school was to approach us and say that they would like to see that done, I would support that wholeheartedly. I've served not as full-time, but I served as a neighborhood resource officer in one of the schools in the career days on my own, volunteered on my department, and that is a huge way of breaking down barriers between young people and officers. I think we all understand the importance of that is to have a good relationship before I find, you know, pull you over for speeding, and before I run into your home and your mom and dad aren't getting along, or catch you drinking alcohol or something. We all know that having that good, positive relationship prior to that is so important. So would I completely support that? Yes. Are we looking at that? Yes, that is.
Do you have any funding for it?
We are looking at funding sources for sure. There are federal grants that pay for those, and
that'd be great.
I have looked at that, so absolutely, that's something that is at the top of my list, because that's the kind of thing that breaks down these other criticisms or barriers, is when those officers are in those schools and building those relationships. And one of the things that I've committed to do, and I'll say it here, I've talked to the superintendent, and I'm going to the schools once a month to read different metric bids, to visit. I've offered myself to be in convocations or on forums or, you know, with I would love to sit on those and involve myself in that. So I've already volunteered that and told the superintendent she has my cell phone number, department phone number. She knows where to find me. And if there's other ways that I can, with my officers included, not just me, but obviously sometimes with the chief there, that's the face of that department. And if kids, and I'm already involved with a large youth group around the island, over 60 kids to the age of pro and 18, I'm one of their leaders. And they already come into the reputation I have it being chill. And I found out, I asked them if that's a good thing, and they said that is. So I'm already started. I didn't know what that meant. I asked. That was good or
here's
bad.
There's progress right there.
So that's progress. So we're getting there. So yes, a long answer to a short question. I fully.
You began your answer by saying you hadn't heard from the school. Is the protocol that you'll, is the school the one that applies for the grant and has to reach out to you, or?
No, it doesn't have to be. But I think in our situation, if the schools were in favor of that, I would fully support it.
Right.
But again, and I have had that conversation, so that would be something I would.
Yeah, you've made yourself available and made that clear.
Right. I don't want to.
But you're not
going to
voice.
I'm not going to say, hey, hey, hey.
Yeah.
They say, hey, we'd like to participate. I do that. I'm like, great. We are a willing participant for sure, and I would love to see it happen.
Over the years, the schools have had a program go in and out a couple of times. Mm-hmm. Usually has died in the past, not because the schools didn't want it, but because the funding got killed somewhere.
Right.
And the schools have a hard time pulling funds out of the classroom for as worthy as it is. And, of course, the city is looking for money, too. And, the real issue is dollars. Mm-hmm. I think if you showed up with a staff person offered to do it, the schools would be happy about that, I suspect.
Yeah. So, and even to work out something where, the costs are shared would be a good idea. That always helps too. So, to answer you, yes, I am fully in favor of that. I am looking at that. We've got a program I think that was put together a few years ago, and we've kind of resurrected that since I've got it. So I'm big about getting out on bicycles and walking beats and being in the schools, because I think those tamp down when we get involved in incidents that tend to be controversial or people question the integrity of the event, that when you've already been there and built that relationship, people are more willing to trust what happened than when you hide in an office somewhere and no one really knows you, it's easier to question you. But I think it's just like being here, and that's why I'm out in the room, is when people see your face and know who you are. Jim, I think you would say that, would you not? Would you trust more if I said something now after having known me for the last 2 months than you would have when I first got hired?
I'm more optimistic about.
But I mean, not necessarily optimistic, but would you have, if an event occurred and I gave you a certain version, would you be more trusting of what I said than would you immediately put, oh my gosh, there's dad, I don't trust him, I don't think he would tell me the truth because of the relationship we have. And I think that goes back to my point that if we're building that type of thing, that relationship, it's easier to deal with tough events because officers are going to be involved. I mean, they have an officer have to tase a student. That looks bad. I mean, I'm not saying we want that, but it may very well happen. We may have another shooting one day. I don't know. But that's why those relationships need to be in place ahead of time. And that's what I have always found in the communities I work in Annapolis, that if we had those relationships, when those events occurred, it was easier to deal with them than if we didn't have that built.
Do you have any updates on the current vacancy background investigation process, where it is in the hiring?
Still looking at it, determining, looking at all the factors involved in it. So we're not, I am constantly looking at that and balancing where we're at and what we're doing. And that's, right now we're not really looking at what we were before.
The existing pool of candidates that you have or that are undergoing background investigations, though, do you tentatively feel that there can be fill that vacancy with one of those candidates, or do you feel that we need to do another round of interviews in the near future?
I'd still like to have time to look at them, but I want to make sure, we've been successful in the last three. The last three candidates we have are Officer Pepper, if I'm doing this right, Officer LeClaire, and Officer Perry. Mm-hmm. One went to the academy, two were laterals, and I think have been, so far, have been very successful for us. I see great promise among those three. So, you know, we talked about, should we take someone that's new and put them through the law academy, or should we take a veteran from somewhere else? We've had success on both sides. So I just want to make sure that if we get a candidate, I think it's very, you know, your most critical process of managing a police department is getting that front end, make sure we're hiring the right people. So I think as we look at this, we're continuing to look at it, make sure that we need to work it. So we have a few days further than we were last time.
Okay. And I think you're going to touch on it as far as if we need to extend any of the eligibility registry.
Right.
Okay. All right. Good to go. Thanks, Chief.
Okay. Well, first I want to just talk about the conference that's coming up in a couple weeks. I forwarded the email to everyone, and I know that Ed is going to attend. I will be there. Just to briefly go over the agenda, it's September 30th and October 1st. And at the first day, the morning is Public Safety Testing's annual meeting. And then in the afternoon, they do, Foster Pepper, who puts on the conference, does basic training for new commissioners and staff, which I think will be very useful. I did that 2 years ago.
You could
ago.
Tell me that I understand.
No, it's good. It's a good refresher, too. So I plan on getting there. I'm not going to go to the annual meeting in Yakima. Public Safety Testing, they hold a follow-up in Linwood in October at their offices in Linwood. So I'm going to go to that instead, basically, for people who can't come to this, because I can't get there in time. And then the following day is the actual conference. The topics, I'll just go through them real quick. Basic civil service jurisdiction, current issues in public safety testing, social media update, psychological exam, avoiding misuse of tests, criminal history, sequencing of process, an update from the Criminal Justice Training Commission, and more, what it says. So should be good. So that's all day Tuesday. It ends around 4 o'clock. So I'm assuming that you would have told me by now if you'd like to attend. I just want to reiterate that the city does pay for this on your behalf as you're representing the city. So Ed and I will be there, and I'm sure we'll report back to everyone, won't we?
Well, I know you will.
I'm glad it's going to
be. I usually can't read my notes. No,
well,
of course.
I think it will be really useful. Yeah. So I'll report back to everybody at the October meeting, I guess, how that goes.
That sounds like a great agenda. The only thing I can think of is if any of us have questions that we want them
right.
to take to PSD or Foster Pepper to engage with them out there, maybe we can just email them directly
yes.
between now and then. Otherwise, we could have said it today. I can't. All those sound really good,
yeah.
and I want to know about them, but if there's anything else that we think of, just
mm-hmm.
email them, and then we can have them report back to us in the next meeting in October to answer those specific questions that come
up. Yeah, and if for some reason, I can't remember, they usually, or at least last time, I think the agenda was at the event, but if for some reason I get that ahead of time, I'll forward it to you. It's probably going to be more specific, so it may be that there's a different topic or something slightly different that you would like to ask about, so. Just let me know. Okay, so in your materials, I have the scores. You want to go through the, start with the entry-level applicants. There's only a few more, so we're up to 91 applicants at this point. And several, I would say three or four from the top 15 or 20 have come off of here in the last month because they've been hired by other cities. So this is an updated list. So it
Great.
Did have more people on it. But I just thought that was an interesting note that, you know, the higher scores, they do move pretty quickly. So. Mm-hmm.
Is that what you noticed, that it was
yes.
mostly from the top of the
from
list?
From the top 20. Mm-hmm. Which makes
a couple
sense.
Of high scores from August.
Right.
There.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these, I'm sure everybody knows this, they're cut off at the passing.
That's right,
passing
70. Mm-hmm.
So
don't,
Belker,
we don't get them.
You deal, well, I mean, I don't know what you deal, but that would be from 70 up.
Right.
Mind.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
No, you're right. So there's...
Are all of these... We had a point where all these folks have taken the new test, or
this is, yeah, this is only new test scores.
Only new, so we've made the...
Well, the old test scores are still out there. Yeah. I can't remember how many.
There's only
them.
Like two or three left.
Well, that's this. Remember, that's the eligibility list. So there's people who took the old written test that we haven't interviewed,
right.
And I can't remember how many of them, though. They're just sort of out there. But the commission wanted to offer, I can't remember, that top 8 or 10, hey, go take the test with public safety testing and we'll pay for it. By the way, none of those people have come back to me and said, I haven't received a bill from public safety testing, and I'm not sure. I maybe seen one or two of them that have actually done that. So, but maybe they just pay for it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that sort of pool that's still sort of out there that, you know, they tested for our agency. That's great. They're all aware that there's a new test. So I would assume if they really wanted a job with an agency that they would go and take the new test. So they're just sort of there. Then you have this group who's taken the new test. At some point when we do interviews again, we will use this group to decide who we're going to interview.
Good.
And then you have the people who have already tested and interviewed and they're on the other list. So that's just an update for you. There's not much else to say about these. I can never decide if I should do the written test first, or if I should have divided it by entry level tests and then entry level eligibility list. So let's just go to the lateral test scores. There are four. So there's one person that tested a couple days after our last meeting with the highest score. So four. Then we get to the entry level eligibility list.
I don't know if PSD can give you this data. How many of these candidates are in-state versus out-of-state applicants?
Yeah, I can get that.
Just curious if they're prior law enforcement permit or out of Washington.
Sure, I'll find out. So these have not changed since our last meeting. There's nothing new.
Is there any... No tests or expiring that we need to consider an extension for that are in undergoing investigations right now?
No, I don't think so. We, on the entry level list, we have dates coming up in October, November, and December, so I think that gives us plenty of time considering those. And then on the lateral list, we have November, and then we have the person that in June you extended you reinstated him to the list. Remember, he had previously resigned and then requested reinstatement. So he's actually going to be on the lateral list until June of 2014. So if the chief, in order to exhaust these lists, we have to either hire these people, they are removed for their own request because they got a job elsewhere, or the chief will request removal. So I would imagine in the next few months that we'll be working to tidy these up to move on to the next batch. Either hire someone off of these or not. But I take it back when I said this hasn't changed. I forgot. On the entry level list, I just wanted to draw your attention to the number 2 and number 3 candidates rank, that those are the ones that at the July meeting you extended their eligibility for 90 days. So I did make a note of that after the meeting. So that's the only change.
And that's reflected in the comment. Sorry.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that day I might need to change that to say, where it says, commission extended eligibility for 90 days, I put from July 13th, which is weird because that's a Saturday, so that should say the 11th. So I will update these.
Good.
And then it will be October 11th. That's it.
I've always been a little confused as to which comment goes with which character.
I know, the lines are not, I'll make the lines darker.
That
will help in the copies.
Oh, all those lines. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I get pretty loud.
No,
maybe the lines are fine for everybody else.
No, it's much better on the screen, so I apologize.
And there's no need to do any additional extensions?
Not now, because we've got October, November, December, and then June, so I think you're okay because you have time to consider the people who are expiring in October if you decide to. If for some reason something changes with the background, then we can request a special meeting if absolutely necessary. But am I correct, Chief, in the conversations we've had, we're okay with what we've got?
Yeah, okay. We don't need any extensions. We're good where we're at.
Right. That's all I have for my report.
Okay, the next item was a continued discussion of what we talked about last time in July was process of continual improvement of our oral board process and question and scoring method. And we asked Kate to reach out to PSC to see if there was a package or a process that they have, a professional consulting service or something as part of that contract that the city has with them on what they can offer and what their suggestions can be made for our oral board and how they, based on their vetting through their human resources, experimentation and things, what a new oral board or what suggestions they can make to us.
Mm-hmm.
Take us through that.
Sure. So I did two things. I sent a message to other agencies on the PST listserv asking if they have recently made changes or major changes to their interview process, including the scoring, and if they did, could they tell us a little bit about that? So I only heard back from three agencies. San Juan County uses this information from the California Peace Officer Standards and Training, which I think I've mentioned before, but I just recently signed up for access to their interview question bank.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the document that is actually very, I think I may have sent this to you already, but this is sort of the starting point. This is available online for anybody to access. So that's what that agency has used, those questions and the scoring criteria information from that resource. Walla Walla County worked with their local WorkSource office, which is the state unemployment agency. And then the city of Des Moines used an agency called SkillWorks, which is based in Tacoma. So that's the information I got from other cities or counties. And then I did contact Pat Walters at Public Safety Testing and talked to her a little bit about what we were considering. And she said they haven't done the oral boards or consulted on the orals for an agency for an entry level or lateral level candidates before. That's not something they've done, but they're definitely willing to consider helping us with that with some more information. So if we were to put together scope of work of what we were looking for. On their website, they have on here information about assessment centers, which is on the next agenda item. And they also have promotional testing on here, but under that, so if we were to put together promotional testing process, they would do structured oral boards. We will develop a customized oral interview process tailored to your department and position. Working with your agency's subject matter experts, we will build a professional process that is job-related and defensible. We will help with rater interviewer training, item development, and score reporting. So it's obviously something that they've done, but just not at the level that we're talking about.
That's for promotion?
Yeah, that's what they do it for now.
Uh-huh.
But she said, it's definitely something we'd be interested in. We just need a little more information on what specifically we were looking for.
Just one thought.
Yeah.
We were talking about the conference that you're attending. I don't know whether you might do some information discussion mm-hmm. with at that conference. Maybe there's some discussion with the folks that are doing this. Or if you could figure out who is from San Juan
mm-hmm.
County.
Yeah.
That sounds promising. I think we have talked about these questions.
Mm-hmm.
Weren't you familiar with the California questions?
Yeah, the post.
No, I come from California.
Yeah.
With blue seats. They're good. I mean, the post
yeah.
is good, but I don't know. We've always, my old department, and probably you guys do too, we always operated on the assumption that entry-level people, you want to get standard questions that are fair questions that could be given to everybody, but the critical thing is they have good people on the board that can assess these people when they're being asked these things. That always is, that seems to be the big point where things break down is, the assessors.
So,
it seems to me there's a couple of levels of questions. I mean, one is the questions themselves, and we've done, I think, some fair work on that, and
mm-hmm.
there's some good resources out there.
Yeah.
Two is what you just brought up, the whole issue of training.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a matter of maybe us upping the ante a little
right.
bit. We've tried to keep it minimal because we're afraid of citizens having to commit huge amounts of time,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, maybe if they're willing to sit there for a day, they should be willing to sit for a day and a couple more
yeah.
hours so that we can maybe be more
right.
meaningful in the training. But to me, there's some big substantive questions that we haven't answered that are kind of maybe not big, but, you know, sounds kind of corny. Are we grading on a curve or not? Do we expect that if we interview 10 people that and put them on a bell that there's going to be at least X number who are going to fall below acceptable? Or, because the problem we've had in the past, we haven't told our citizens clearly what our expectations
mm-hmm.
are, and some of them are sitting there thinking, I don't want to give this guy a below 70 score. I like him. He's a nice guy. Or, you know, he's okay.
Mm-hmm.
We ought to establish, you know,
yeah.
we could easily say that every single test should come out with the three top candidates being at this part of the curve and these guys not,
mm-hmm.
you know. But it's just a matter of our expectation.
That's pretty tough, though, because you sometimes will get, especially to deal with a small number of candidates, you might get a lousy candidate. Or you wouldn't want to pass any of them.
Yeah, well, there's that too.
Yeah,
yeah.
Our
curve obviously passed too many.
Dealing with a bell curve on that number,
statistically,
yeah,
it's not a,
yeah,
yeah, it's probably not something. You know,
but then, how do we give the question? Then is that was just one example. How do we give guidance to our interviewers as to not just what the questions they should ask, but how are we translating their attitudes towards scores that are meaningful?
Well, also I have provided you here. A couple documents. So one of them is an excerpt from this interviewing peace officer candidate. It's the section on candidate evaluation, and it talks about the scoring system, individual versus group ratings, and setting a pass point. So I think that will be really helpful. I will admit I have not read this whole thing, so I apologize I haven't read it in advance, but I think this will be very useful, this excerpt. And also from the question bank online, they have this other section, this other document that I've given you is all the rating criteria. So each factor, there's six factors, they've come up with rating criteria, numerical, with very, I think, useful language to describe how you would rate someone highly qualified. So similar, very similar to what we were talking about with anchors and suggestions from Rich Mancuso, so I think we're almost there. And there are a lot of questions in this bank. I just really skimmed it, but there are a lot of questions each that would relate to these specific factors. So
I'd like to table this and continue
mm-hmm.
to work on it in future months and have you go to the meeting in October
mm-hmm.
with these kind of things, talk amongst other departments to see how they do it, and then feedback from PST on questions, scoring methods, and how they and what they do
mm-hmm.
as far as training the interviewee.
Okay.
And one of the other things I was thinking of is this kind of 360 survey that I've done before in other agencies, that if you think about, like, Chief, your last three candidates that came out, Pfeffer and the other candidates, if we can do, if they have an opportunity to do, like, a now that they've gone through the academy, they've been hired by our process, they've gone through the background investigation, and you believe them to be successful officers and doing a good job for the police department. So if we could do almost a post-interview interview and say,
you know, this is a model candidate. How do we get this type of candidate in an oral board?
I think that's absolutely very intuitive. I think it's very smart method to use methodologies to go back and find out how we chose the last three. We did something right so far. I mean, they've been very successful. So I think that's a great idea to look backwards and say, what did we do right that brought these three to the forefront?
And just as we interview the interview panel, you know, to get feedback from them on what interview questions worked, what didn't, the scoring got worked. So then flip it. And as the candidate that's set on this side, now that we've hired them and now they've been successfully brought aboard, what worked in that process and what didn't? As the interviewee.
Yeah, we use that in law, right? The juries, at the end of it, they ask the juries, hey, poll. Why did you, you poll them. Why did you think what you did? I think that was a wonderful idea.
And also, the chief is a really big resource for me on this because he's been through this so many times with, you know, on a much bigger scale. So I look forward to working with him on the, you know, what I would like to do is, like you said, go to the conference, report back, maybe in the meantime, if I can get on his calendar. You never know. There's a possibility. Sit down and go through what we used last time. I would maybe we would come up with a proposal or some suggestions to bring back to you about changes that we could make.
And I think the focus is probably less on the questions, more on the score.
Right.
And we need to do a better job with developing a scoring system that really works.
Mm-hmm.
And then being able to then take that and explain that to our panelists.
Right.
This is how you need to score this with your.
Do you remember at the last meeting that we talked about maybe saying to a citizen or a police department member, whoever, okay, if you're going to be on this panel, then we may hold two more this year, so we're going to need you're signing up for a year. Mm-hmm. We talked about that as an opportunity instead of trying to have to train people every time, but ask for participation for a lengthier period of time.
Perhaps you could get a pool of citizens at the beginning of the year. You get six or eight citizens that are interested in being panel members.
Mm-hmm.
You bring them all in and you do one day of training
with
the police officer candidates or with the police officer interview panel members and citizen, and you train them.
Mm-hmm.
And then over the course of the whole year, they all receive the same training. They don't necessarily interview anybody that day.
Yeah.
They get the same classroom exercise of what the interviews are supposed to look like, why we're asking you how to score, and then they are assigned essentially a quarter. And if we have an interview panel in these 3 months, then you're on the panel.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. That could be, because there's a lot of people that want to work, but they don't have time to go to these meetings, and, you know, it's fun to do something. That's important. I thought you could get some good people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get the citizen just being part of that training process will also provide us feedback on the effectiveness of our training and the way we're forming that interview.
Yeah.
My one concern is the confidentiality of that interview training, that we train up 8 or 10 different individuals if this ends up being, and then ensuring that the integrity of that test process and questions and so forth isn't inadvertently passed out over the course of the next year or then on.
You know, another thing that's done frequently is at least, not all the time, but I imagine Chief's pretty familiar with this, is you go to other departments and you find good people who've evaluated people there, and they love you. They ask it the day off. They come in and help you out here.
They do it free of charge.
They do it free of charge, absolutely. Yeah. Their department will pay
those officers that as supervisors on other departments that sat on those rating boards.
Yeah.
Will participate. So that is another option to consider.
Last year we just had Paul, I think only people from Paul, but they're very, very good. I mean, that's the only agency we utilize.
Right.
But I know in the past there have been other cities that
would. But I remember that was a big component of the quality of the panel, because they look to the officer to give it more context.
Yeah.
It really focused the panel a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an important role. That was a good point.
Yeah.
In fact, our panels today in Indianapolis are made up of all outside vendors.
Mm-hmm.
So there's independence in the penalty, you know, but also citizens. No, they were just by sworn officers, but my point is they were outside.
They were not part of the system.
They didn't come back in. I mean, citizens, they were a great component too, and they did because of original biases and sometimes because of material that maybe somebody had access to and now you had, there's no question about the integrity of it. Not saying that's part of the system, but that's what you're saying.
No, I was just thinking, panel I sat in, I actually got invited to sit down on one for the city of New Orleans. They were having their first lieutenant's examination in something like 10 years because for the civil rights thing, a number of reasons, every time they have a test, it was thrown out. So they went through the universities. And I happened to have that the guy, just lucky, at SC, one of my instructors nominated me, and I got picked. They picked mid-level guys from all of them. I was hooking with a captain from Baltimore PD, and the first day, they gave us the training the day before we sat and we started interviewing people. I'm not going to waste a lot of this time. And everybody was just, it was great. We're patting ourselves on the back. Well, this is really going to work. The next day we go in, these guys are coming. Everybody knows the question. What the hell's going on? We find out that one of the guys being tested, a guy from Tulane put the thing together. One of the guys being tested had his girlfriend was this Tulane instructor's assistant. So she got the test, gave him the test. He probably was not telling anybody. Of course, everybody in the department threw that one out too. The only thing that was good about that whole process is that the city of New Orleans gave us $100 a day for per diem plus free hotel. So it was a great a great 4-day trip. It didn't do much for New Orleans.
That's not going to happen here.
Well, could I direct a quick question to the chief on top of it?
Sure.
Chief, would you like to open up this proportion, the idea of having two citizens and two sworn on the oral board, or is that something that's a done deal that shouldn't be revisited? So at the moment, as you know, we have two civilians on an oral board. Usually it's one out of town sworn, and usually it's one officer from our department. Is that important enough to revisit, or is that something that should stay as is?
I think what we have in place so far, like I think Rob has pointed out, we've had three officers who went through a good process, and we picked three good officers. I would leave that up to this board to consider that and weigh those options, and then if they want to ask my opinion, I'd be more than happy to give it. But I don't want to answer that knowing that kind of is where, and that's what they do. So I think I'd be speaking out of turn to comment on that at this point.
Understood. Have you seen that before? Maybe that's a better question. Have you ever seen a civilian vote on an oral board weigh the same amount as a professional vote on an oral board?
I've heard it. I haven't seen it. Okay. You mean actually participate in it? Again, as I said, our boards in Indiana were all sworn from other departments. We didn't have anybody from our own department because of biases or whatever else to remain objective. But I wouldn't want to speak out of turn.
Our panels were three, weren't they?
Four. We had one four. Three because we had somebody got sick or something. So, we ran two
citizens and then one from Bainbridge and one.
I think if with the focus on assessment, it's such an interesting topic to think about composition. I just wonder if anybody's interested.
Oh, I think that's no. I think that issue is always worth chewing on it and thinking about. I think you kind of like the idea of having citizens participating in the process. I think it probably makes it more critical to have a good element of training ahead of time. But I think. I kind of like the idea. I don't know whether we have 50-50 grants, so maybe just one. We can, when we get ready to launch the next round, we can decide.
I'm happy to ask that question also.
Just curious to see the composition of other agencies, boards, and their training that they put the interviewers through. So that can be a work item. And then, Chief, if you can talk with those three new officers and see if you can get some feedback, or if we can have a one-on-one with them or something to try to get that feedback from them on their observations of the process and what worked and what didn't. Appreciate that. Okay, so I think we got some items coming out of this. For the entry level and laterals for the officer level positions, I really like, because that's kind of the gatekeeper, and the officer levels are the ones that are going to have the most person-to-person interaction. So I like having citizens on that panel. I think as you go up in ranks and we look at assessment centers for promotionals, lieutenant levels and above, because they've been in the department so long, I think that, and it's more of a managerial leadership type position, I can see those wanting to be more objective, because it wouldn't make sense for a candidate for lieutenant to be interviewed by all of his buddies that he's been serving with as an officer. And that's where you really need the outside objective candidates that don't know this individual that's trying to promote to lieutenant. You want a more objective, in some ways, a more objective or professional evaluator than a lay citizen interviewing an entry-level candidate. Thoughts on that?
I like the idea of having somebody from your own department, because I think we've seen some failures in Indianapolis where we all know that the value of written oil. I think I've talked to a couple studies that I've mentioned last time that the show and written are actually more indicative of success than the oral, the form we on it. And that's nationwide. We've changed that over the years. Indianapolis used to put more weight on the written, and then that reversed. And I see that nationwide. And there may be other studies that show otherwise, but my only thoughts on that is when you remove completely the department here, they, especially with the size of the department there is, I mean, Bainbridge is fairly, has its own character. And I think that officer is more attuned to what you may want to see and not want. Not so much, it's only one out of four, so it's not been so much influence or the causes of the previous four, but kind of give them perspective of what they see from their own department, and then let those three make the decisions based on that information. So I can't back that up with a study that I've seen, but I would think that having at least one injury for the police department would help give some more wisdom and judgment to that.
No,
you're talking about promotional.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking about entry level promotion.
Promotional would be tough for that guy, whoever you put on there, because no matter how the list came out, it would pretty well be considered by the rest of the guys there that he was the one that got promoted. So you'd have to put a stand up there.
Maybe on this size, you may be right, but I think that's where you would put a ranking officer then on that board, not a control officer. Obviously, because who you want to judge, you can be able to see the rest of what your supervisors have. Not someone who's ever been one. So that's like you said, something that you want. That's just it's an imperfect process, obviously, but
in our near or intermediate future, are we gonna be involved in promotional?
Yeah, that's topic number 8.
Okay.
But actually, Chief's statement brought up the weighting of oral and written weights. So if you add that to your question, you take the PSP and work towards your distribution list question. I'm curious.
I think it's pretty standard.
If our weighting criteria is standard across the board, or if we want to rethink those percentages.
And the reason I think that is because it's in the model rule from Foster Pepper, but that doesn't mean that people haven't deviated from that, but I imagine most people follow that, but I will back that up.
All right. And then continuing down this road, the item number 8, promotional assessment centers and test development options. We've never had to do it before, but eventually it's going to happen. Someone's going to... there's going to be a vacancy, someone's going to promote to the lieutenant position, and whether that's done all internally or it's outside candidates, we just got to know, because there's going to be a huge front end. We've not done this before, not rode this horse before. So we're going to need to try to figure out, is there an oral panel? Is it all written? Is it a professional assessment center that interviews those lieutenant candidates? So what that looks like, and the longer we can have to front load that process and develop new questions and new interviews and all of that, the better. So can you kind of take us through what you know of so far from what PSC did about?
Yep. So in my conversation with Pat, we talked about assessment centers. They have two options that they provide. They have two models. One is the traditional model where it's just our agency and you would just just be our people testing, going through these various exercises all day or however long. And then the other model is a regional model, so you're sharing the day with other agencies. So you're sending your people to a certain place where they're going to be mixed in with all sorts of other people, and then you get the data back and the reports just on the people that you sent. So it's a little more cost effective. So I'm just reading here. So instead of hosting it at your location, you can send your candidates where they will participate in the process, and you will receive a report related only to your candidates. So the person that they have that develops all the exercises.
Okay, can I just ask a procedural question? Mm-hmm. So we've not done this before, so I'm trying to picture what would happen. So there's a vacancy, and we need to fill it by promotion. And then that decision's been made. We're going to fill this by promotion from within, right? Mm-hmm. And so the chief says, all right, well, I'm going to fill this by one of you guys, gals. Mm-hmm. You're all free to apply, I guess?
You would set up certain criteria. Maybe they have to have
experience.
Mm-hmm. Many years. You don't want a 6-month rookie applying.
So you're not going to open it.
Not open it to everybody. You put, an example, you may put, a minimum of 60 credit hours of college education, maybe a bachelor's degree. You may require that he or she was a detective. Some types of.
So in our
FTO, you would be given. Like our department, they would give points that you've been a prior field training officer, or that you had been a relief, like we have relief supervisors. So you'd then maybe give them credit for being a relief supervisor and how they perform under that. So
but you come up with this criteria. So
it's called a profile.
A profile, right? Mm-hmm. And you can design that almost knowing because there aren't that many in your department.
That's right.
So that it could land on one or two or three or four.
That's true.
You want to design it so it gets your best. Number of your best people.
Right, but it could also be designed so that it lands on
one. He's saying, I think you got somebody in mind, and so
reading
the criteria.
Yeah, right, but okay.
That's
but,
where, oh, you're, yeah. you're right. That's
but
happened.
In
that's
a smaller, in a smaller
that's
organization,
right.
well
be a part of that.
So, but maybe there's three. Let's just say the criteria boil it down. There's three people who make sense to maybe apply for this promotion. So then that's where we are, and now we're saying how. Who's going to interview them, or how would we score them?
Mm-hmm. Right.
We can ship them all off to
right.
these guys, and they can go with a bunch of others.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me jump in here and just tell you what we did. And so you have this profile, so you're going to have an in-basket exercise, written exercise. You're going to give them a supervisor situation. They're going to evaluate it, write a response down. That profile is going to be, could be, this is all example, could be worth points. You have two candidates. One's got a PhD, and one's got the 60 minimum credit hours. You probably want to give a little points or credits to that person without a PhD. So that's what I'm saying. So you would give them profile points. I'm not saying this is how it's ever happened in the past, but for my department, such a large department, they gave points. I mean, I was taking the lieutenant's test next to attorneys. We had 23 attorneys on our department that had a practice in the day and worked at night. So you would give those individuals points and a profile so they would score higher. So say, for example, you did better in the oral and written, but your profile was very low. His profile was much better, but he didn't do as well in the oral and written. He stayed overall may have a higher score. So you determine, you figure out those criteria and the weight that you give each item. Military experience, for example, is another one. FTO, the supervisor, you get points, half points.
I can also imagine, though, that you send these folks over there and they do the written and oral, and they both are above the minimum score or something.
Sure, they do great.
And then we say, we'll certify both of them. Mm-hmm. And you end up, or all three of them.
Right.
All of the ones that were profiled, all the ones that went over there, all of them did really great. And their scores weren't identical, but are we going to say that whoever wins over there is the one you have to hire?
No.
That's the situation for the chief, because
then he gets the
best one.
Right.
Yeah. He has to have the, remember, then he still gets the top three.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So that's, yeah. There's still a level of
discretion,
right,
on because then you're your own personal
top candidate, but mm-hmm. I may know enough about this guy or this guy or
yeah.
gal that says there's no way you want them to be the supervisor,
yeah.
even
and
though they scored well.
Right.
So I may take the number two person or number three
right.
person.
Right.
Again, that discretion.
Yeah.
So just a couple follow up questions regarding just as an example, a lieutenant position. Is it city policy or is it a collective bargaining agreement? Does that have to be a promotional process? Or could you open it up to outside candidates and a sergeant from Paulsboro or from the county wants to apply and he or she is an FTO and
I get all that.
Has all these and are they eligible to apply for that position or can they funnel it and say no, only internal candidates?
So Rule 8.9, promotional examinations, vacancies in the higher positions of a class shall be filled by promotion whenever practicable in the judgment of the commission.
There's also a budgetary element to this. If someone's moving up within the department, your payroll doesn't change except by the amount of the incremental increase.
Well, no, you lose a patrol officer.
You have to hire somebody
in.
Well, you'd have to hire a new patrol officer
mm-hmm.
because now it's not
a
patrol officer. You've got to backfill where he left.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So you've got an empty patrol officer slot.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
So, you know,
there may be some.
Yeah, there could be. But I think, to me, again, I can add this to my list of questions, but I think I see this as sort of a dialogue between you and the commission as to how that
so
would
when the job posting is created, it's either assigned as an internal only
yeah,
or external.
Yeah,
I think
once
discussion.
The commission is notified of the vacancy, then I would sort of assume that the chief would come to the conversation and say, I would really like to promote someone, or I'm not sure that we have enough candidates in-house to promote. I have no idea. I'm just making,
yeah.
you know, I'm not talking about current situation. I don't believe we have enough candidates in-house, so I would like to open it up to outside candidates.
Has
so.
It ever happened before? I mean, obviously there's been promotions before. Has it never
not
come
for a
before?
Long time. I feel like it was 2006,
maybe?
Something like that,
and
yeah.
In that time, it did come before the commission?
Yes, and a person from outside was hired. So it was opened up to the outside. So, I was just going to let you know that Pat told me that John Gray, who's the former chief of Lake Stevens in Arlington, is the person who works for PSC who develops all the exercises for the assessment centers, and they're all tailored to whatever rank you're looking at. Then we also talked about promotional testing options they have. You know, they have off-the-shelf written tests that they can provide and orals, they can customize them. They do the structured oral board process, as I mentioned earlier. They have a lot of other options available, like work performance rating. It says, ever wondered if there was a way to incorporate a candidate's work performance and accomplishments into the testing process? Using assessors and documents that are evidence of a candidate's performance, specific behaviors are evaluated and scored. Kind of what you're talking about with it in basket. Then there's the Washington State Law Enforcement Supervisor's Written Test. This is a test of technical knowledge that the topics include Washington state laws, recent court decisions, and aspects of police supervision. A part of the test is customized by incorporating your department's policies and procedures. They also offer, if we felt like we had a very large pool or something that we wanted to do, we wanted to consider this a workshop for candidates on preparing for promotion. So it's a 3-hour workshop. Participants learn how to prepare for testing, what separates the top candidates, how scoring is done, tips for success, and pitfalls to avoid. That seems like that might be something that we would want to consider to best prepare our candidates. Performance profiles assessment. It's an online survey. The agency received a report about the candidate's job-related strengths, weaknesses, and suggestions on how to help them improve. And the candidate also received a report to help guide them in their professional development. So that seems mutually beneficial. And then, as I mentioned, the assessment center. So there's a lot of options to consider here.
How much time do we anticipate having to, I mean,
have it all set up?
Yeah, I mean, when a vacancy will be coming, it's not, hopefully, not just going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It could.
Yeah.
It's hard because if somebody leaves, you know, they really don't have to give you a whole bunch of notice.
Right.
It's nice when they do, but it's certainly not required. So I don't really have a good answer to that question because we could
would someone operate
in,
on an interim basis?
Yes,
yeah.
We have relief supervisors. Mm-hmm. So if we were to lose a supervisor, we wouldn't have, like, weeks we need to have it done. Well,
yeah.
We could go a time
right.
to have that relief supervisor or that other
so we would get you in here and we'd share information about how which
mm-hmm.
way we ought to go. And,
But I think, to Rob's point, we should be front-running. We should be getting prepared. I mean, there's
right.
no rush. Now, I don't have any word from my four lieutenants that anyone is intending to, you know, file a notice that they're intent to retire. And they don't have to.
Right.
But typically, they say, hey, you know, I may be pulling the plug here in 6 months.
Yeah.
So typically it does. But, you know, other health concerns, family members get sick.
Mm-hmm.
They can say, you know, I was going to retire 2 years from now, but I'm going to do it today. You know, my dad had this happen. I'm going to help with others. So it happens. But with only four, I think you're right. We'll have some notice. So we can do without.
And then I have one other kind of long-term thought, and some of it may be subject to collective bargaining as well. Do you see any reorganization in the rank structure of the police department? You know, not just officer to lieutenant, do you see a sergeant position or needing to reorganize the hierarchy at all of the department, or are you comfortable with the way it's organized, detective, sergeant, lieutenant, so forth? Or,
I'm looking at that now. Because I, you know, speak honestly, I think there needs to be, and the general orders call for it, somewhere between your four lieutenants are act as first line supervisors, which is typically what we call sergeants. So if you were to mention that to another department, it would confuse them if you said, we go from patrol officer to lieutenant. And so then between sergeants and chief, you have this vacuum. General orders and has historically a major job. You had a well, we had prior had a commander, but it doesn't call for general orders, calls for deputy chief. So have someone helping to run operations, policies, and things like that. So I'm evaluating that, looking at that now. And you know, initially, I think there may be a need to, but that's down the road. That's not in the favor.
How did that happen, Chief? Was that something that maybe a year that Vanguard couldn't give anybody any money, so they gave him a title instead? I mean, you know, is there any history?
Yeah, there is. And what I've heard, I have no basis for this, but there are some schools that if you are a lieutenant, you're able to go to the sergeant.
Well, no question. It's you'd get a union fight you couldn't believe if you tried to change the rank to the sergeant. I mean, that's just a given, but I just wondered how that...
I don't know that. That's just anecdotal evidence. I have no idea. But I know there are schools, and a classic example is at the FBI National Academy.
Mm-hmm.
They typically only accept lieutenants and above.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have the rank of lieutenant, they obviously don't come back and say, well, I want to buy a DPS sergeant. They say, oh, you're a lieutenant? Okay.
Right.
Well, you have five other departments. Just saying you're a lieutenant, that's on the paper, means a lot more than...
No question.
Even though it's not the right job.
Right. So I don't know how that happened here. I don't know. I know at one point we had sergeants, so how that happened, I don't know the history behind it, but...
not going to be an easy thing to change.
No, I'm not looking to...
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'll take you a coffee, Ed. I'll
put
you
I'm not looking to change that rank.
I didn't say you were going
to.
It just...
Well, I don't want that to. I know this meeting's recorded. I want to make sure everyone knows. I am not looking to change lieutenant sergeants. I'm perfectly fine calling.
I saw it written somewhere, in some recommendation, or and I can't remember where. When I was doing some background, I thought, boy, that's going to be a tough one. Is that something?
Yeah. And honestly, I don't think we have to. I'm wrong, but. What purpose does it serve whether you call the sergeant?
Yeah.
It just costs money to change it, so leave it the way it is. And the structure for Bainbridge Island, if you look at general orders, it calls for a chief, a deputy chief. That's why I don't understand where the word commander came from, so that's another history question I don't know the answer to. But it's a chief, deputy chief, four lieutenants. You have the new supervisors, they act as the supervisor and the lieutenants off, and you have patrol officers. So that's the current structure of the general orders manual.
We're good on that?
Yes.
Carry that? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Gentlemen, proposed rules amendments?
Oh, yeah. No, that's not. Bruce, I would tag Bruce and tip Bruce, to help me with that. I did get from Kate last week.
Finally.
While I was in Texas.
Yeah.
Some of the rule changes that I think we were looking for, and in addition to some others that Kate thought maybe tweaking, which is helpful, and I'll bring them back next time. But Kate just sent me her thoughts, carrying on what the biggest issue that we had in the task really was we had this appeal that occurred, and that raised some issues with the appeal provisions, which are under Rule 18 hearings. And this is where I really want to focus to try and address the issues that our outside counsel identified and had some kind of concerns with, that we could tweak this a little bit. So I'll just kind of describe what I see. The issue is when you read this hearing section, it talks about who it applies to and who gets to appeal decisions and who don't. And we had a situation where someone wasn't, the way it reads says, the following Rule 18 shall be applicable to all employees subject to the civil service system, meaning guardian,
mm-hmm.
or who alleges that he or she was injured by violation of the rules or laws applicable to the civil service system of Bainbridge Island. So that second thing seems to open it up. Anyone who alleges he or she has been injured by a violation of the rules, okay? But then it has these subsections underneath it, and when you read them, you see what they really mean by that second clause. It applies to any employee who is demoted, suspended, or terminated, right? We were talking about, because these appeal provisions apply to someone who's applying for a job or is on our eligible list and didn't get selected or something, and they make use of this rule. In my opinion, I don't think it's intended to cover that. The second subsection, any employee, again, it's an employee who is alleged to be probationary or may only appeal a commission question. And then 1.3, any employee, this is it, or the chief of police. Okay, so that's the or other person.
Mm-hmm.
They were referring to the chief of police. Those that are subject to this, and the other person, meaning the chief of police, you can make an appeal here. I don't think it was intended to be applicable to anyone who thinks they've been injured by a commission decision. Go.
Well, one, these rules don't stand alone. These rules are within the context of the statute, of the state statute. I think the state statute, if I remember right, does impose upon the commission the duty to take complaints from anybody who thinks that there's been a violation, that they've been injured by a violation of the civil service rule. And so I agree with your reading of this.
Yeah.
The answer is,
okay. So Bruce,
what happens when that person shows up under the statute, and if he doesn't fit here, there doesn't fit.
Right.
And that I remember that section, and I think that's
it's kind
right.
of vague.
Well, that's about the section you're talking about is about someone making complaints and whether we can hear complaints and things like that. And I think that's different from an appeal of a decision. So you and I can talk about it. So I think this is about appeals of certain decisions, civil service decisions that are made.
But could that, for example, that person we were talking about did an appeal, could they have fashioned that as a complaint?
Yes. Maybe. I think so. There I say if that's a different, if he's a fashionist complaint, he'd have something to go under. But I don't think this would. Anyhow,
yeah.
This is finally now whatever. It's starting to, this issue's starting to kind of gel with
mm-hmm.
me. What I think what I want to do is get reports between now and the next meeting. We were supposed to do this last time, but now that we're on board here, and come back with some thoughts and maybe some proposed revisions to this section. The other thing I'd like to do, if it's possible, is have a conversation with our outside counsel.
Mm-hmm.
She's still on retainer. Is
yes.
that possible for us to do?
Yes.
So I'll get her number and
mm-hmm.
maybe talk through that. But my sense is that we were here trying to just fix whatever she thinks was wrong with how that whole appeal
yes.
may have been
yes.
have come through us.
I agree. And the other part, which I did, I think I flagged in what I sent you, is the it's under... It's way at the beginning. Oh, 3.4, review of an appeal from actions or decisions of the secretary. So
all right, yeah.
Previously, when someone's been rejected, I would cite this rule, which is not really accurate
right.
because it's not my decision
it's
that the person was ruled and was. So that I think that whole section needs to be, I think we just have to figure out what we want it to say, because it's saying the commission may review any action or decision of the secretary. Well, I can't think of that many non-ministerial decisions that I actually would make that you would want to review that I haven't made because you told me to. You know
right.
what I mean?
Yep.
So. But yes, I need something when I say to the person, you've been removed from the list for, you know, not showing up or material reasons or whatever it is, you failed the background. Are they going to have the opportunity to appeal that?
Right.
And if so, where am I? What am I citing?
Right, and the point that you made about the more limited application of 18 may be that there are people who come through 3.4 who don't go to 18.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
then, of course, we're left with what?
Yeah.
What can we do about that?
Yeah.
So that expert has been codified here in the rules as well.
Need a call?
Yeah.
And then my other thought is, I know that it's in the form that they sign off when they submit their background investigation. They can't review the background investigation process given the confidential nature of that. Does that need to be mentioned in our rules, or is that covered by them signing that form and submitting that information through the city, or is there need to be a specific rule in our Civil Service Commission that you can cite that you didn't pass background investigation, subject to rule, you know, whatever we call it, 3.4
mm-hmm.
subsection C, whatever it might be, that if that be an addendum there.
Okay.
That might be a way of giving you that umbrella of reference.
That's what happened. I mean, that's where we go back to the issue that we had last time, because the person wanted to appeal, but we had to provide, I mean, they can't appeal if they don't know what they're appealing. So
yep.
if we tell them that they can't act, you know, that we're not going to tell them anything, then they can't appeal. So how do we resolve that? So I lost.
Okay.
So I will send you, our attorney's contact information, and I'll let her know that you'll be contacting her.
Right.
And I'll make the city attorney aware of it also, because I think
oh, yeah.
we have to do that.
Right.
What's
that's
the city attorney?
The interim city attorney?
Oh.
Yes.
Works in a firm, but is he one
right.
day a week?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'll make sure that, I mean, I don't think there's any issues with that, so I'll just make sure he's aware of that.
Okay, great. Thanks for looking at that. We'll push that forward then to the October meeting for some additional information and proposed changes. Number 10, regular meeting daytime adjustments. This came up because, thanks, Ken. We have some after-school child care conflicts.
Your secretary is a pain. I'm
no.
so sorry.
No.
So I have some conflict.
Family friendly.
Yes.
Yes.
Thursday is going to be a problem for me now that my child is in school. So I looked at the calendar, and Tuesdays, pretty much any Tuesday of the month is available, or I'm 99% sure it's the fourth Monday. But the problem, and talking to Rob, Mondays can be problematic with holidays. So I don't know. I guess I would first ask if anybody has an issue with a Tuesday meeting.
Tuesdays, I think, work as well for me as Thursday.
Are you really disappointed that it's not going to be on Thursday anymore?
No.
Okay.
A Tuesdays work okay for me.
Okay.
With enough meeting sessions.
I'm retired. Yeah. Unfortunately, I have no little kids.
Do you want mine?
Maybe I should just take my daughter over to your house. There you go.
In my probe, we're always looking for a babysitting
That's
job.
Right.
At you, your office.
My office. Yeah.
So
do we need to have a rules?
Yeah, we do.
To do that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we should pick which, I mean, do you want to just, to be consistent, make it still the second, so it would be the second Tuesday of the month instead of the second Thursday of the month? Is that helpful?
That's right.
Do we want to change the rule to say at such times as it is scheduled by the board or something?
I
think it has to be a standing
date. I think for the Open Public Meetings Act, we have to have a regular day, meeting day and time.
Okay.
To call it a regular meeting. Otherwise, every meeting would be a special meeting, and you couldn't take final action on anything that wasn't on the agenda. So
Tuesday. I'm trying to think how we should do this particularly. Should we just make a motion that we change our next meeting date to the second Tuesday of the month and decide that what we want to do is amend the rule to reflect that second Tuesday going forward? I don't know that we can amend the rule just...
I think you can. I think you can amend the rules at any time.
Just on motion?
Yeah. I am not...
I think we may be able to do that. And I'm not necessarily opposed to it because it's just a date that we're changing. But our practice has been to give a comment.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
That's true.
So I think what we can do is we can do a special meeting for October. We can essentially cancel the regular scheduled meeting in October that's supposed to be on a Thursday, set a special meeting for that second Tuesday in October. We make the announcement, the public declaration that we are amending this. Does it need to be that complicated?
I think we can establish a standard that says ministerial changes do not need to go through the public
approval
process.
Let's
just make that.
I can certainly send a message out to the 40-something people on our email list to say...
As a courtesy, of
right,
course.
The
yeah.
meeting,
yeah.
their regular meeting date and time has changed.
Great.
Not time, but.
So do I have a motion to change our regular meeting date to be now the second Tuesday of each month?
So moved.
Let me
comment?
Comment.
Yes.
Which is that we're, and our intention is to do so by amending the rules to reflect that.
So all in favor of that amendment to the rules?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate that accommodation.
So that's a change to Rule 2.1.
Correct.
And since we're going through some other changes now, presumably we'll wrap them all together and do another restatement?
I think so.
We don't want to have a bunch of little amendments.
Here and there. Yeah, I think that would be just fine. If for some reason that's not a good idea, I will let you know right away.
I'm going to go for a run right now.
And still 4 o'clock still working?
Yes,
okay.
Yes. That's great.
Okay. All right, and we're canceling the executive session.
Mm-hmm.
The only other comment I have here is I am out of town the next week, so I leave tomorrow. I won't be back for about a week and a half. So if anything comes up, William's on board.
Okay.
I'm on board.
Right on. Anything else? Any other last minute comments? Good of the orders, anything like that?
Well, I'd like to thank Linda for her service. She's absent. Linda, if you're listening, I'm sure you're listening.
Yeah.
We will miss you, and we appreciate the service that you gave to the city of Bainbridge Island.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'll piggyback that and tell you thank you, and a thanks to all you board members. I know it takes you're busy and take time out of your schedules to do this, so I appreciate your service to the city and helping me and doing what you all do.
Thank you.
right, we stand adjourned.